It's our Saturday morning podcast where I get to explore things that don't necessarily find their way into the show. And there's a show right now called Billions that I would put in among my five or six TV shows of all time. You know, from Mary Tyler Moore to Cheers to Sopranos, Narcos, and I would put Billions in that. And Brian Koppelman is the co-creator, executive producer of Billions, the writer, the director, the producer. Let me start, Brian. First of all, thank you so much for coming on. I want to start with this. When you start to write a project like this, I always feel like a writer wants to say something. What your big picture is, could I say that what you were trying to say in the growth of this was, hey, corruption's everywhere. Even the good guys can be bad guys. Is it, or am I way off?
Well, you're not way off. And I make the show with my lifelong best friend and partner, David Levine. And first of all, man, I'm so psyched to do this. And the way in which you talk about the show all the time and all different kinds of media has really reached us, and we totally appreciate it. And I want to start by saying, in fact, it's so great because, you know, one of your favorite guys, Hank Azaria, and, you know, he's a fanatic for you. He's Brockmeyer, obviously.
He's never seen your show.
Well, so Hank and I play poker together. And he's constantly giving me shit about the fact that he hasn't watched it. And then one day he comes to the game with a big smile on his face and he says, well, I think karma got me because I love Coward and he hasn't watched Brockmeyer and all he wants to talk about is Billions.
And by the way, I have watched Brockmeyer a handful of episodes, but I'm addicted to your show.
Yes. Which drives Hank insane, and which gives me no end of delight. So I just texted Hank right as you picked up, and I said, by the way, I'm going on with Colin right now.
By the way,
give you a lot of shit.
Let's get Hank on our podcast next week. This is a good heads up to our guys, because I have watched Brockmeyer, and I think it's a riot. But there is something about Billions. I like true crime, and I like dark. And I find, yes, from Maggie Siff to Damian Lewis to the great Paul Giamatti, there's a darkness here that I really crave and I really like.
Well, all right, so let me step back and answer in all seriousness. But I'm glad you said you watched Brockmeyer, because Hank said if you watch Brockmeyer, he will watch Billions. So now next week, have him on and hold his feet to the fire.
I will.
Here's the thing. Dave and I don't speak that often to – like these themes. What we're happy about is if someone like you picks up on those themes, or if someone like you understands what we're trying to say about supposed good guys and supposed bad guys in America right now. And look, we noticed that there were these people in positions of power supposedly trying to serve the public good who ended up actually just trying to serve their own good. And when you see that, you kind of can't look away from it, right?
Right.
The moment that the blindfold's taken off and you see the way that the world really is, you can't tell yourself it's some other way. So whether it's Elliot Spitzer, who was, you know, a moral crusader who it turned out was leading a very different life. By the way, not a life that necessarily, you know, guy wants to, if a man's unhappy or a woman's unhappy in their relationship, there are lots of ways out of it. But if you're going to live the life that you want to lead, then you shouldn't be someone crusading.
That's
on
right.
Issues of black and white, right or wrong.
That's Chuck Rhodes, and the U.S. attorney, yeah, for the Southern District. And that's what really lands with me, because I found myself through the show initially liking Bobby Axelrod, knowing he is manipulative and dark. And Chuck Rhodes bothered me. I kind of turned, I love Giamatti and everything, but I think the way it landed for me, just a kid who does sports, was I was almost like, remember when Oliver Stone made Wall Street and he was shocked how popular Gordon Gekko got? And I watched Bobby and I thought, oh, hell, same thing. I'm falling for the guy who I should hate, and I hate the guy who I should love.
Well, but here's the thing. One of the things, I'd say one thing that's different, I mean, there are certain similarities about Reagan's America and the America now, you know, the America that that Oliver Stone was writing about,
right,
and the America now, right? But what Dave and I started thinking about, and what we wanted to see, what we wanted to sort of put out there for people to watch and make their own decisions about, was we noticed that guys like Axe in the real world, guys who had a lot of charisma, a lot of money, a lot of power, great verbal skills, that those characteristics started standing in for people for qualities of character like kindness, empathy,
right.
charity, right? And that as a culture, we started celebrating these people. So we, in the first season, you know, you present Axe in a way. He seems cool. It's Damian Lewis. He moves a certain way. He speaks a certain way. He's funny in a dark way. But he does terrible fucking things,
yes.
man. Like, right by the end of that first season, and this is spoiler to anyone who hasn't watched the show, so Hank, is Harriet, turn off this for 1 second and go catch up. But in the first season of the show, you know, he, a guy who he clearly cares about, he lets that guy die sooner than he had to because that's the way that he could win this engagement against Chuck Rhodes and keep himself free. And we wanted to see when people would recognize, you know, this guy, his actions, if I remove myself from being charmed by him, if I step back from the way that how cool he is, his actions are terrible. If someone in my real life did these things, I would think they were a pretty bad guy. And by the same token, right, Giamatti's character supposedly wears the sheriff's badge, but there's a moral erosion, right? There's a lie that people in power sometimes tell themselves, which is, hey, when I get to the next spot, I'll be able to do so much good for the world that it doesn't matter how much bad I do to get there.
Yeah.
Only they never get to that final place, right? And so, you know, yes, if you pick up on the fact that we're showing you a world that feels dark, I just think it's a reflection of the world that we've seen. Now, we want the show to be entertaining. We want the show to be fun. We want you to be able to laugh. We want you to be able to enjoy the references to the movies and music and all that stuff. But we definitely also want you to think about why you feel the way you feel about these various characters and how it reflects on the world in which we live now.
Well, yeah, it's complex. And the river running beneath the show, Sopranos wasn't just a mob story. It was a guy having a midlife crisis. That's the
right.
river running beneath the show. And so it was very relatable. He's like, his son's driving him nuts and his wife's driving him nuts and he's going to a therapist. And outside of the affair part, I could totally relate to all of it, that and whacking people. But, you know, it is funny, the personal experiences. You know, sometimes I watch the show and I'm like, somebody that wrote this show got hosed in an investment. Did you take, it is funny, did you have some personal experiences? Because there's so much nuance. The writing is so smart. I have a couple of buddies who are in finance, and they love the show. Who have you used and leaned on for the lexicon, the financial lexicon, the political lexicon?
We find these experts. You know, Dave and I have been doing this for a long time.
Yes.
If you even go back to our first movie, Rounders, where we found this poker scene and then spent a lot of time with these card players to understand the ways that they thought and talked and their customs and culture. So it's the same thing with this. We spent years thinking about it. We spent years with these people writing down what they would say. Well, I was talking to a guy the other day who's a really successful guy on Wall Street, and Dave and I have had dinners with him over the years, and he said, you know, you guys fool me. You keep me talking. He's talking about me and Dave. We'll go to dinner. And he goes, you're telling stories. You're getting me to tell stories. I'm talking. And then I notice your partner just quietly taking out a little piece of paper and writing down everything that I say.
Right.
And that's what we do, you know. And we tell these guys, look, we're gonna protect your identity. We're not going to sell you out, but we are going to use pieces of what you explain about the world to make the world of the show more realistic. And they love it. You know, I'll get texts on a Monday morning from 5 different hedge fund people saying, I noticed that little moment that I told you a story, you changed it, but it's kind of like that. And they love it. And for us, it's great access and a great way to make sure that we're getting it right. And the same thing on the world of the lawyers and politics. We do the same run, and then we hire consultants to vet it all with, so that we'll hire an expert like downtown Josh Brown on the finance side, or a lawyer who was a U.S. attorney, and David Miller on the legal side. So we'll do that so that we get the stuff right. And, you know, it's more fun to get it right and then see within the world as it really is how to make it compelling.
You also introduced a character after a couple of years, Taylor Mason. Asia Kate Dillon plays the character brilliantly. When you introduce that character, which is a real curveball, it is this sort of, not even a Svengali, a genius enters the show. And it is initially an ally, but I could sense, okay, that she's not going to stay under anybody too long. How much of her storyline had you developed pre-insertion? Or have you just gone, you know, you sit down and you go, okay, let's have her go here, here, here. Did you, when you introduced Taylor, did you know going in she's going to become the arch nemesis of Axe and Chuck and all that at the end?
Well, first of all, I just want to say not a she, they. Taylor is gender non-binary, and so is Asia Kate Dillon. But I'll say this. We knew that we wanted to introduce a character who would seem from the outside very different from Axe, whose external characteristics, who extrinsically seem different, but who intrinsically had certain similar qualities that like Axe would recognize in them. And we hoped that the sparks would fly so that we could do this kind of story with Taylor. And so that's what we're, that, you know, you never know. One of the great things about a long-running TV series is you can try. So you can have this idea. Now, if Asia came in and couldn't, and the magic didn't happen, we would have had to have gone a different way. But was this our hope? Our hope was that when we introduced Taylor, Taylor could be the kind of character who could take up a lot of real estate on the show and who would be able to interact with these characters. And then, as you say, I mean, Asia is just a knockout performer.
Oh, she steals so suddenly, that. She steals the oxygen in this scene. She's brilliant. She's sinister. She's caring. She's, again, she's wild. They is wildly complex.
Yes, exactly so.
Yeah, and I think it's an incredible character. But I always wonder, you know, when Bill Belichick's game planning, you know, on Tuesday, he may change the identity of his offense from Monday, and it goes, and then he gets new film. I'm always interested when you insert a character.
I love that. Yeah, well, we always take in new information. I was talking to the great poker player Eric Seidel once, and I was saying, hey, Eric, if you make a read on the flop, if you have a read on when you just have the whole cards and then a flop comes out, I said, are you one of those poker players? And you know, Eric's like the third winningest player of all time. I said, are you one of those guys who just, hey, I make a read, I stick with it? And Eric said, no, man, you have to always be taking in new information. So you have your opinion, and you hold to that opinion until new information tells you that you're wrong. And he's like, you have to be willing to both commit and then go, wait a second, I now see I was wrong, and throw the hand away. And so that it's the same thing, right? It's, yes, we have this plan, but if a better idea shows up, if an actor shows up who blows our mind, I mean, that happens all the time where an actor's so good, you just want to keep writing for them. I will say, though, that the general notion of where the Taylor character could go, that character could eventually, could seem like one thing, but could eventually become a rival for Axe, that was in our minds at the beginning. But as I say, man, we could have easily shifted it, had to shift it, if Asia wasn't so terrific.
As the summer starts to sizzle, do you feel like you're cooking in your clothes? If you can't handle a heat, you need new underwear. Tommy John's What I Wear, the perfect solution. Innovative, cool cotton underwear for men and women is a summer must-have. It's like your own on-body air conditioner. Cool cotton fabrics feature breathable, lightweight fibers, keep you 2 to 3 times cooler, and dry 4 to 5 times faster than regular cotton. That's what Tommy John provides. The men's underwear features a contour pouch to keep you neat and nestled. Tommy John men's and women's underwear sport a no wedgie guarantee, and all their underwear come in a range of styles, colors, and fabrics that are suited to your entire summer wardrobe. The legs never ride up. The waistbands never roll down. Right now, go to TommyJohn.com/herd. Herd gets you 20% off your first order. That's TommyJohn.com/herd. TommyJohn.com/HERD.
Brian Koppelman joining us, co-creator, showrunner, executive producer, Billions on Showtime, with his partner, David Levine. They write this show. It's amazing. It's fascinating. It's one of the 5 or 6 shows of my life, and I tend to like dark stuff and complex, odd stuff. It reminds me of living in Connecticut so often. And it also reminds me that I was next to New York and the intensity of it. You've worked with Matt Damon, okay, a star. You've worked with, Damian Lewis, Paul Giamatti, multiple people. Is there Maggie Siff, remarkable. Is there a theme or a talent with actors, whether it's a great character actor or a star? Where is the opening? Because the idea, Paul Giamatti's facial expressions are so good.
Yeah,
you could turn the sound down on Paul, and I would still have a feeling I know what he's saying. He's so animated. Where's the opening? What if I said, okay, here's the foundation of great acting talents. What's the base? Where does it come from? Where's the opening?
Well, I would say, by the way, I love that you lived in Connecticut. Levine, my partner in the show, he lives in Greenwich too, which is another way we got great insight into this world because he's surrounded by these hedge fund guys, right? Openness. I would say the ability to be really present. What these actors have that is amazing is they can memorize the lines. So they have the lines memorized so deeply that then they're free to just react. They're not worried that they won't say the line. So they're present. They're watching what the other actor does, and they're not over-planning what they're going to do. There are some actors who plan it out, who come onto the set and know, I'm going to, you know, this is what my emotional arc is going to be for the scene. But there are other actors, and my favorite actors are the ones, and these are the ones that Dave and I work with the most. They're there to see what happens, how they would feel in that moment. And it's very hard. I don't know if you've ever tried, you know, if you've done commercials and stuff, you've done a lot of, like, when it's, I've acted in movies. I'm in Michael Clayton. I have a really fun little part in Michael Clayton. And it's a great thing if you're in my job to act once in a while because you remember how hard it is. It is so hard. I was at dinner with J.J. Redick the other night. Yeah. If I can just bring sports into this for
sure.
A second. And I love J.J. We spend time together. I'm a huge basketball freak. And I'm a good foul shooter. And I said, like in high school on my team, you know, I shot close to 80%. And I said, J.J., I don't understand why guys miss foul shots all the time. And he looked at me and he was like, well, first of all, understand. You're running the court, right? So, and obviously J.J. is one of the best who ever lived at it.
Yeah.
He said, I have a lot of sympathy for guys who miss these foul shots. He's like, you're running the court, you're gassed. You have 15,000 people shouting at you. You have everybody you know watching at home. Also, you know, most of these guys, their hands are too big for the basketball. And he's going on and explaining to me why I'm an idiot. And he's right. Why I'm an idiot to sit at home and be like, well, I'd make that foul shot. And when you get on a stage to act, it is so hard to stay relaxed and calm and cool and feel present and alert and alive and in the moment because your self-consciousness creeps in. So the greatest actors don't have that self-consciousness. They're other-directed. They're looking at the other actors. They're reacting, and they're living in the moment. Like the best ball players. The ball players who remember the moment, the ball players who are aware of how big the moment is, are the ball players who often crumble, right? Brooks Koepka, the entire attitude that Koepka takes out onto the course, I think is created so that he doesn't get overwhelmed by the pressure of the moment, right? He's constantly saying, hey, man, this doesn't matter. It's just golf, right? It's just hitting the ball. And each time he says that, he reinforces to himself, don't feel pressure. Don't think about the stakes. Don't think about history. And I have to think that that makes it easier for him to succeed, and I think it's similar with the actors. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no. Derek Jeter, whenever asked about a slump, and he didn't have many long slumps, but people would ask him, and he says, listen, hit the ball hard. Don't overthink the room. Just be up to the plate, react to the pitch, and just hit bat on ball hard. Like, live in the moment, live in the pitch, go back to fundamentals, and react. And it's just react to them. Kobe's the same thing. Kobe had brief slumps. It's like, man, you just get the ball. You go to your process. You don't, you know, A-Rod's an overthinker. He had longer slumps.
Right.
Jeter said years ago, this is why Sam Darnold's going to be good for the Jets. Sam Darnold, who I'm a Jets fan because I'm a Sam Darnold fan.
I'm a Jets fan, too, sadly. Okay.
So I saw Darnold's first practice in college, and I walked up to Steve Sarkisian, and I said, that's Andrew Luck. And he said, just more athletic. Is that Darnold has enough sort of blue-collar simplicity to his brain. It's a real interesting combination. A-Rod was almost too smart. Michael was smart enough, but could relax and go right back to what he was in the moment. I know this is kind of confusing, but Darnold has this. That Darnold, Peyton Manning was a teeth clencher. He was too smart. He thought too much. Brady's just smart enough to not overthink. And that's what Darnold has. He's got this kind of sense, a simple sensibility. He's like a country boy who can memorize a playbook. And so to your point, the great actors, they live in this moment where they just, they're confident enough to go into a scene free of netting, I guess.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. Free of the stakes of the thing outside of the, right? Free of all the reasons it matters outside of what happens during action and cut. And they prepare. So that's what I was saying about them having memorized liners. That's what you're saying about Darnold knowing the playbook. They prepare enough, they think about it enough, they own the character enough that they can sort of let all that go.
Yes.
When they walk onto the floor and they're going to do a scene. And they're all very smart. I would say you can't really be great at acting, I don't think, if you're not bringing a certain amount of intellect to bear on the material before you walk onto the floor.
By the way, Brian Koppelman joining us. Your ending did not reach. There was no reach. It was smart. It was thoughtful. And it left me wanting more. And this is not a shot at Game of Thrones or Seinfeld or, you know, last episodes where it feels like, wow, that's a little too many.
Well, because but also in fairness, those guys had to end their series. We're still going.
Yes.
You know what I mean? It's really hard to end your series well, and I hope we don't end ours for a few more seasons. But it's easier to do listen, it's all hard relative. You know, I live a charmed life. I love what I do. We feel a great obligation to our fans. The people who love our show are fanatics like you. Like, they're so into it. I don't know. We would just feel terrible to let you down. That said, ending a series, I think, is really difficult to satisfy.
Well, I wasn't bothered by The Sopranos, Brian. I thought it – I didn't think it gave me a
– I love it. I love the
ambiguity of it. I loved it.
And I love Mad Men's ending, too. Mad Men is my favorite show of all time. Mad Men and Sopranos are my favorite shows of all time. And for me, both of those endings were exactly what I wanted them to be.
Yeah, like a little ambiguity, but, you know, I love the characters and what happened after it went black. I was okay with either way.
Me too. I agree.
Brian Koppelman is joining us. You had something to add here?
Well, I was going to say, you were talking about our ending. I was saying it was easy to...
Right.
Easier to do an ending in the middle of your run than at the end of your run, and I'm glad to hear that it left you wanting more. No, that's perfect. Thanks for saying that.
Now, do you think about the ending, knowing that you have a year or two left? Is this something discussed between you and David?
Yeah, we talk about it all the time. We talk all the time about building it right. So, in other words, if you're going toward a certain ending, as you get into your fifth and sixth seasons, like let's say we're going to make seven seasons, as you get into your fifth and sixth seasons, you have to start, even if they're not putting blocks in place that the audience is going to recognize yet, you have to start drawing that out a little bit, right? You have to start game planning for the end.
Yeah. No, listen, this is the New England Patriots have never scored a touchdown in eight Super Bowls in the first quarter. Think about that. The best offense, the greatest quarterback, never a touchdown.
It's amazing. It's amazing.
It's amazing. So what they're telling you is it's Ali. Ali didn't have very many first and second round knockouts. I'm going to feel you out. I'm not going to engulf my team, or I'm not going to unveil my tricks. This is New England. This is why I think Belichick's one of the smartest coaches ever. Every Super Bowl, they tend to run more than they pass during the regular season. They're significantly worse in the first quarter and significantly better in the fourth quarter. Everything with him is the long play. He's the classic 401k. He never takes it out. And so, Brian, I think to a large degree, you are moving, because I can kind of see where it's going. But I do think you do, as a writer, have to think about the end, even if you're 9 episodes, 12 episodes from it.
Yeah, you have to. Yeah, you're exactly right.
I want to end on this. When you do something and you're in this, I would imagine creatively it can be engulfing. Can you work on other projects while you're doing this, or do you have to be completely committed to this?
When we're making the show, we got to just make the show. It's similar to coaching quarterback. It's similar to like a head coach in the NFL, in that. So this is the first time right now, as you're talking to me, is the first sort of time I've had any time off since we started the show.
Oh, my God.
Dave and I each got ourselves like about 2 months to just clear our heads. Last season, we had 3 days between finishing the post-production and starting the writer's room.
Oh, Lord.
We're opening the writer's room in July. So, no, what I do is I try to do things that are very different. So in any – like I covered – a couple golf tournaments for Sports Illustrated where they were like, hey, just go write whatever you want about at the Masters, or go write whatever you want about the PGA. And that's awesome for me. Like anytime I can do something like that where I'm able to write because I love writing and I love thinking about this stuff, but where it's not about the show, it really helps the show. It really helps when I go back to the show to sort of have a clear mind. So that's where I am. That's where I am right now. You think Tiger's going to win today?
No. I do think it's a unique U.S. Open because Rory just won. Mickelson won at Pebble Beach in February. Brooks Koepka owns the world. Tiger's healthy. I think it's a very unique U.S. Open where our big guns, our cleanup hitters, they're all on hot streaks. And I think it's going to – and that course is beautiful. It's tough. I think it's going to be art. That's a painting, and I think this weekend it's a painting, not the Last Supper, but it's memorable, iconic figures in this canvas, the most beautiful canvas in golf in the world, and I think it has a chance to be an all-time U.S. Open.
Me too, man. I'm so excited. I'm so excited to watch, and I think there's a chance Tiger can do it. He loves the course. He's won a lot on this course, and I just think that there's a chance that with the small greens, his ability to hit those irons is going to intimidate people a little bit.
Well, you know, Tiger is one of the only athletes that got me to a TV Sunday at 4 o'clock for about a decade on Sundays at 4. Sopranos has done it. Brian, you have done it, you and David,
you.
With Billions. Your podcast is The Moment with Brian Koppelman. This past Sunday was the season 4 finale. It's just a real honor to have you on, and thank you so much for your time. Get busy.
Hey, man, I'm thrilled to talk to you. And, hey, Hank Azaria, Colin is watching Brockmire, so you have no choice now. You must watch Billy.
I am. Thank you,
Brian. Thanks, man.
You bet. Thank you.
We'll talk to you.